The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Now offering 5 years free servicing on every new 142 Hyundai, Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
And back to you, Will Self in studio. What is it actually about Joyce that attracted you first?
Well, he's not Tony Blair, for a start. That makes him unsurpassingly beautiful to my eyes. Honestly, that man's got a nerve. I think it's very difficult, isn't it? Because Joyce comes with such, you know, if you're interested in books and you're interested in literature and you're a young person, then Joyce comes with such a kind of massive aura around him. It's very difficult to get out from under that until you pick up Dubliners. And I think in 2014, probably more so than in, you know, the 1970s or 80s when I read Dubliners first, it may be difficult for young people to apprehend quite how formally daring it is as a collection of stories, quite what, for a 25-year-old man, as Joyce was when he wrote it, to do what he did is, you know, as I get older and I read it more and more and more, and I've just reread it again for this session, I am very nearly struck dumb by the brilliance of it. In the context of what was happening in literature at that time, it is a formal innovation. It is a way of writing about people, and particularly about what are called ordinary people, but it's a complete misnomer because, of course, what Joyce finds in the ordinary is the extraordinary, that nobody had really ever done before. And it is... Dubliners is a revolutionary book in a very, very true sense. It brings literary language, which in the 19th century, late 19th century, was formal, class-bound, carried with it an enormous ideological agenda, into the world in a way in which it ceases to be that. It is democratic in the best sense of the word. It unites the highest learning and perception to the most quotidian, normal, intimate sort of experience.
Minister Leo, of course, you're Minister for Tourism as well. And in a way, what Will was saying, there are for more people, Joyce is really an idea, isn't it? You know, it's people in straw boaters or whatever on Bloomsday, rather than an author that they're reading an awful lot of.
Yeah, that's probably true. I'm probably one of the many people who tried to read You're the Seas and failed miserably. And
I only ever got as far as the middle. I forget, there was a bit in the middle where I kept getting stuck and...
You've got to get to the end. The end is the big payoff. I mean, recently when...
I hate the end, because I think all that Molly Bloom bit is a man's invention, actually, of the way a woman might think, and I think it's not... Anyhow, that's a different kettle of fish.
Well, can you think of another first-person stream of consciousness passage in a woman's mind that you find that much more convincing than Molly Bloom's soliloquy at the end of Ulysses?
No, but anyhow, let's move on.
I think we've started something. Let's get to it.
The thing, when you mentioned that he was 25, she said, blushing furiously and continuing to talk. The thing I find about Dubliners is it's incredible to think it was written by a 25-year-old. You think of that whole... middle-aged sadness that infuses the dead, you know, the sense of regrets and choices and only beginning to realise how trapped you are by choices you've made and that they're not what you thought they were and all the rest.
Yeah, I mean, exactly that, the capacity to empathise with people or who are much older. You think about the story Clay, you know, an ageing woman. I mean, I don't know how you feel about Joyce's writing from a woman's perspective there, but I think he gets it. He kind of nails it. But I mean, just thinking about Bloomsday here in Dublin and the way in which the Irish state has co-opted Joyce, I mean, that's hilarious, isn't it?
Do you have a sense of the irony there, Minister?
Not really. It's it's a new state, of course, that adopted Joyce, and we've named bridges and other things after him. I'm actually going to be at the Martello Tower tomorrow just to check it out. And one thing that's happened there, which is a really nice story, is it's now run by volunteers. It had been run by Fáilte Ireland some years ago in Dublin Tourism, actually, and it wasn't possible to staff it anymore. And people from Dunleary and from around there got together, and it's now run by volunteers and has been renovated by the state. So there's a good story there. But I have to say, I read Dubliners and I really, really love the dead. I think it's a fabulous story. And one thing you can actually do on Culture Night is to visit the house on Usher's Island.
I've never done that.
Yeah, if you get a chance to do it next year, do it. It's not open much, but it's open some nights. And you can actually go into the room where the dinner party happened, or the room on which the story is based, and you can it's set
actually,
up
I know
that way.
Someone who hired that out for a dinner party once. Apparently you can do maybe they shouldn't have been there, I don't know, but anyhow they had a dinner party apparently fantastic. It would be a great thing to do.
Apparently the cuisine at that time was
you could do it for
best,
your 40th because we had a woman texting in to say you're 35 years old and terrific, so just in case we got her wrong. Stephen Kinsley, you want to come in
on to imagine the dinner party with everybody with the clip hats on the meat going
the dead for my 40th.
It's too many layers there, Leo. Don't go there, man. No, it's just because it's Father's Day. There's a brilliant bit. There's a brilliant passage. It's one of my favorite bits in Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, where he goes. Stephen Dedalus goes with his father, and they go tramping around. They're looking for people that he would have known, and his father's trying to kind of bond with him in this really rubbish, you know, unreconstructed, emotionally retarded male way. And it's brilliant. It's so well done. And the father just decides halfway through just to get hammered, and Dedalus is this, you know, it's a very very, you know,
not in Dublin, it's in Galway.
No, it's in Galway. Yeah. But he just decides, no, I'm just gonna. And they're looking for their people that they knew, but they're all dead and their sons are taking over the businesses. I think it's just a wonderful passage and kind of the worst Father's Day ever in a way, you know.
Alison, you did Portrait. Was it Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man for Your Leaving? You know, normally when you do those books for a leaving, it kind of kills it for you forever.
It does, yeah. I didn't
like
really
the colour
enjoy
of your school uniform.
I didn't enjoy it at the time. That's why I went back to read it, because it's hammered into you, you know, and it's very much about do this, do that and learn this bit off. But I did go back to read it and I just thought, you know, so many layers to it. There was just something so timeless about him, the way he was able to express how he was feeling at the time, being such a young man. And I remember that piece about with his dad, and it's just so typical, isn't it, to go and get drunk because he doesn't want to deal with anything. But it's just so fascinating. It's so timeless, you know, so beautifully written as well, that it was a pity I did it for the Leaving Cert, I think, because it's you learn it, you know, you're taught it a different way, you know, you must know this, and you don't really get to have a good feel for it. But I thoroughly enjoyed it when I went back to it, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you make? There's this new theory out, isn't there, that because of some medication he was taking, that Joyce had syphilis, and this explains an awful lot about his illness that he ultimately died from, and possibly the mental illness of his daughter and all the rest, and various people saying, no, not at all. And does it matter? What do you think?
Well, I mean, everything matters to some level. I mean, it is interesting, but there's enough in the alcohol to explain all this behaviour.
There is what it's because
he was a hard drinker. He was almost certainly what we would call an alcoholic now, and his daughter suffered from some form of schizophrenic disease. I mean, it's on the principle of Occam's razor, the booze and schizophrenia are enough to explain that dynamic. You can chuck syphilis into the mix if you like.
Jerry, what do you make of all this joicery and all the rest?
Well, I mean, I suppose, you know, given the shrillness and thinness and excoriating judgmentalism that characterises most of our conversation, you know, rereading Joyce does no harm and possibly does some good. But, you know, he was a cosmopolitan in a situation where there was very little cosmopolitanism, and not in a self-conscious, affectated way. And of course, his life in Trieste, which was an extraordinary mix of people, was so outside the experience of the vast majority of Irish people. And how, you know, after the Habsburg Empire collapsed, that was ethnically cleansed in the 30s by the fascists. And there's just a sense that when you're listening to the whole Iraq story and different communities trying to, you know, they've never found a way to live together again. It's 100 years since the First World War. All those old empires gone. New lines drawn on a map. And you read Joyce, and all these people are, in his time, in his literature, living together, sometimes not particularly happily. But it's sort of a moment, if you like, that if you look at the problems of our own time, there's a thread there to link us back and forth. And his appreciation of others, of other types, of other sorts, which we are, I don't think we're very good at that.
Well, Steph, just one thing while you're with us. We had a big initiative this week in this country. I think we're the first European country to bring in plain packaging for cigarette smoking. You're still on the fags, are you? What do you think of that?
On the fags.
That's what we call it here.
That's what we call what Father Ted calls the whole rough and tumble of the homosexual lifestyle, being on the fags.
No, cigarettes only, I meant. Packaged ones, I presume.
If your only flag of rebellion is a lit cigarette, then you're a sad individual indeed. And we live in societies now where well over two-thirds of adults don't smoke, and that's the way it is. I mean, I think that, you know, as somebody who believes in the legalization and control of what we used to be called soft drugs, I think we can see that in an equivocation between these two kinds of legislation about people's personal habits, there has to be a midway. But, you know, it often seems to me that governments do a lot about smoking because they can. You know, so when the Blair government actually, in its, I think it was the beginning of its second term, introduced the ban in England, that was viewed as a great success, and all the PR flacks were out there saying, well, what a great success is. But they had simply reached a tipping point in society. So it didn't really represent some kind of crusading bit of public health legislation on the part of the government. And I feel a bit this way about the blank packets. I mean, I think that obviously for non-smokers, it's of no interest at all to see tobacco displayed like any other good. But, you know, whether or not the best we can do as a society is to ensure that, you know, young people don't take up smoking, I'm not so sure. While we're busy thinking about participating or at any rate tacitly accepting the deployment of predator drones to ineffectually drop high ordnance on people whose country we took a direct hand in ruining 14 years ago. Because in my belief, Iraq will now be a failed state. It's over. And, you know, that man Blair, he has a great deal to answer for. So if you want to offset his introduction of a smoking ban as against his, I would hazard possible duplicity in taking Britain to war in Iraq, then I don't think that's enough to save him from the big fire.
Leo Varadkar, do you want to respond to that? Your name's increasingly associated with health these days. Yeah. I know you're in transport, tourism, and transport, tourism, and sport. And apparently, everybody keeps saying you're going to be our next minister for health. So maybe this is something you've been thinking about, the smoking ban.
I haven't really. I'm very, very, very busy.
Would you like
in
to be minister for health,
now.
Leo?
I haven't really given it much thought, quite frankly.
You don't believe that, but...
He's very fit and healthy these days.
He looks very healthy.
I think
one of the best things you need for a minister for health is health, frankly. I mean, look, we had that man Andrew Lansley on our side of the pond, and he didn't look very healthy. But you look great, fabulous complexion.
You
look quite
very much. Well, I'm actually half Indian, which is kind of where the complexion comes
from.
Right,
well, fair enough.
But thanks for noticing.
Well, I've got a touch of dark blood myself, so, you know.
This is not how I saw this conversation going.
No, I don't think it's how anyone saw this conversation going, but it's been
quite fun. Spend yesterday out in Skerries doing the Skerries Triathlon in fabulous sunshine.
Yes, I saw you were tweeting about it.
And fabulous countryside. No, so big thanks to Fingal Triathlon.
You think
you
should be Minister for Health?
He's got my vote. Not that I have a vote,
I'd be very, very straight with Tanya. I actually don't. I don't stress about it because, you know, the reshuffle will happen in July. I actually have no control over it whatsoever, and the Taoiseach will decide, so I don't.
That's very comic for a politician, because I suspect you might mean that. Gerry Howland, what do you think are his chances of ending up in health?
Well, I think Leo's a very credible politician, which I'm sure will be held in the balance if there's a bigger job and a bigger challenge in the offing. I suppose the advantage a new minister for health will have, Leo or another, is that there's only a year or a bit more to go, so that if they set a limited number of priorities, there's less benchmarks to fail against. Which I think that was one of James Riley's problems, you know, the full term, if you fail, eventually caught up with him, time outran him, and other problems besides. But a new Minister for Health, actually, because it's a time-limited job, might actually have a chance of being one of the first to come out of Hawkins House.
And
alive.
In your view, is there any chance of James Riley staying in the post, or are the pundits right?
Oh, I'm sure there's every chance of him staying in the post. I haven't a clue, needless to say, but I'd be surprised if he's left there.
All right. We're going to be talking to George Hamilton in the moment, him of the very lively T-shirts about the World Cup. And I don't know who was awake for the England game last night. But anyhow, it all ended in tears. There you go. So we'll have George and more on the World Cup after this break.